Hey East Meets West listeners. In this week's episode, we'll be diving into the fascinating world of electric vehicles in China, EVs. With the world's largest auto market, China is at the forefront of the EV revolution, with not just one, but several companies looking to unseat Tesla at the top of the EV hierarchy. In this episode, we'll explore the reasons behind China's electric vehicle boom, the challenges it faces, and what it means for the global auto industry. So sit back, buckle up, and let's explore the electrifying world of electric vehicles. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to the East Meets West podcast, a podcast about understanding Asia tech and how Asia tech affects the world. My name is Dan, joining me as always from Astral Ventures, Albert. How are you doing this week?
Dan, I'm going good. We were just talking, getting back into running. You know, I did a 10K this morning before.
The humble brag.
No, it was a very, very slow. It was a very slow 10K. Did a 10K this morning before brunch, which was good. 10 before 10, as they say.
But do you know what's better than running, Albert?
Driving.
Hopping in a nice driving. Car. Exactly. Driving. In this week's episode, we're going to be running through a bit of a primer on EVs, electric vehicles, particularly focusing on the China market, which is booming at the moment. Albert, like, if you had to pick, if you had the money, if you had the want to have a car right now, obviously noting you're in Sydney, a terrible place to have a car, would you be tempted or would you be more likely to go of an EV?
Yeah, if I was to buy a car, and I think about this a lot, which is I really want to buy a Tesla. No doubt, if I could afford a Tesla right now, I would absolutely buy one. It's a beautiful car.
So it's interesting. So I think a place to start here is just understanding what the current trend line is in China. And at the moment, EVs are absolutely booming. And if I look at this chart, which has got, you know, from 2015 all the way to now, 2023, it is definitively a hockey stick moment, the amount of EV sales in China per month. You know, in 2015, very negligible amount sold. Now it's up to about 800,000 units sold every single month. And that's just been an absolute hockey stick in the last probably about 3 years, Albert, where it's been spiking. And that's for a combination of reasons. But as we just sort of start looking from a macro lens, Albert, what stands out to you as one of the reasons EVs are really taking off in China relative to the rest of the world?
Yeah, good question. A couple of things, and this is a really exciting thing to talk about this year, particularly as like EVs continue to rise in adoption. I think broadly, given manufacturing and a lot of incentives by the Chinese government, EVs in China or Chinese produce EVs are just substantially cheaper than their counterparts in market. And so I've been cheating over the past kind of couple of weeks as we, you know, record the pod. I always bring up ChatGPT and ask it, you know, a couple of questions. A question that I just asked it is like, what's the difference between, you know, Chinese electric vehicles and Tesla EVs? And the big one is pricing. It's like, you know, obviously ChatGPT has old information, but the price of Tesla EVs and other EVs, like European made EVs or some Japanese EVs, they're just more expensive than Chinese electric vehicle brands. And part of that is driven by heavy subsidies, but also just cheaper cost of manufacturing.
Yeah, I was thinking of bringing this up a little bit later, but now is probably a good point if we're talking about price. One of the most popular Chinese EVs at the moment is the Wuling Hongguang Mini EV, which is the best-selling fully electric car in China. It is absolutely tiny. It's only got a range of about 120 kilometers to 170 kilometers. If you look at my notes, Albert, you can see a picture of it. It's this tiny, it looks like a van, but imagine about a third of the size of the van. It's just absolutely tiny. One of those really removable, maneuverable cars you might see going around Japan. It costs about $7,000. So when you think about the range of vehicles that we have with combustion engines, we're now starting to see a diversity of those options in the EV market, where it's not just like, you know, your Tesla Model S or whatever. Now you've got these variety of cars. And one of the options that is really blowing up in the Chinese market is this really small, you know, just maneuverable car that they've got. But equal to that, you've got the BYD Han, which is kind of like the Tesla Model S. It's a mid-sized luxury sedan. It can travel up to 605 kilometers on a single charge, 0 to 100 kilometers in 3.9 seconds. It's, you know, it looks a little bit like a Mercedes-Benz S-Class. Difference is, though, it comes in at about, you know, $45,000 compared to the Teslas, which is in that higher price bracket. So it comes to that point that we're going to be talking about as we keep going on this pod, Albert. You're starting to get really high quality electric vehicles in China, but at fractions of the price.
Yeah, I mean, the flagship now, the BYD Huan Plus, sells for about 20K USD equivalent, which when you think about it, is ridiculous for what's effectively like an SUV type of electric vehicle. And it's actually crazy to think about having a 7K Australian, which is like about 5K USD equivalent for a mini EV. And I'm looking at, you know, it's Dan, where you've got, it's like similar to like a Kia Picanto. Yep. For anyone who can picture that. It can do around 120K or 170K in range. Like, that's kind of the perfect city car for anyone who lives in the inner city. And now you can get an electric vehicle for the equivalent of $7,000. You can see why, you know, Chinese electric vehicles are starting to, you know, kind of lift off globally.
Yeah, and I think what I left out just on the top is the comparison, which is, you know, there's about 800,000 EVs being sold in China per month. The US only sold 800,000 EVs in 2022 as a year as a whole. You know, so China is now selling about 12 times the amount that the US is, which is not surprising given the market size of China, but it is surprising given what you might expect would be the relative development cycle that they're on in terms of EVs. And now it's really, really apparent that China is ahead of the curve. And I just wanted to go into some of the history of that, which is that, you know, in the early 2000s, they really, China as a country, decided to invest heavily in EVs because they could see that the combustion engine market was heavily prioritized by the European car manufacturers, your Audis, and then you had Japan, which was really cornering the market on hybrid technology. The Toyota Prius was a really, really big hit across the world. And so they kind of went all in on EVs, and Wang Gan, who was sort of a former engineer for Audi, then became China's Minister of Science and Technology, really started to drive EVs and making it part of the national policy in China. So much so, Albert, that between 2009-2022, there was $29 billion worth of subsidies by the Chinese government into the development or the sales of electric vehicles. And it's become like this really, really forward-moving, innovative industry in China.
Yeah, we were joking at the top of the pod before we started recording that, like, that kind of long-term thinking is something you can get away with when you are kind of like, you know, CCP controlled, or like the state is controlled by kind of effectively one party long-term. You can get away with like that long-term thinking and politics and that investment. I don't know if you could have necessarily, or if any other government or country could have executed a very similar type of investment if that happened in, say, Australia or the US.
Well, one of the interesting, I think, policy decisions that China made, and this is, I think, noteworthy for strategies adopted by other Asian countries with the adoption of Western technology or vice versa, which is that China didn't, as is, you know, usually the case with many of these countries, they didn't prioritize their domestic manufacturers over foreign manufacturers. So as an example, all of those tax breaks, cuts, etc., they offered equally to Tesla as they did to their domestic players. And this created what some people call the catfish effect, Albert. Have you heard of the catfish effect?
I don't think I've heard it in this specific scenario, but I have definitely heard of the catfish effect.
The catfish effect is essentially that you have a dominant player in the market to create competition to build up the rest of the competition. So essentially in this situation, you had Tesla come in, become a market leader, the standard bearer in China, which then pushed the Chinese local brands, local companies, to really up their game so that they could compete with Tesla. And, you know, as I mentioned, the BYD Han, now they've got a series of vehicles which you could argue, spec-wise and otherwise, are on par with the Tesla. And that's a really interesting choice because you can see in other Asian countries, you know, decisions are made to deprioritize foreign investment or foreign companies. And I think that does actually prevent them from moving up the curve, because they're just not, they're not seeing what the other brands are doing. They're not trying to react to it. They're not trying to better it. They're just kind of excluding them from the competitive mix.
Yeah, I mean, China was still a bit protectionist with that kind of policy and mindset though. Like up until 2021, I think, or 2020, they had a policy where if you were manufacturing automobiles in China, you had to do it through a joint venture where the Chinese government or another Chinese controlled entity had up to 70% ownership in that joint venture. And obviously that's now been wound back to then promote, wound back very recently, I should say, to promote, you know, more and more investment to continue pushing the quality of EVs in China. But it's worth noting that they still had a protectionist policy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, now you've got Tesla really locked into the China supply chain. They've got the Shanghai Gigafactory, which is actually Tesla's most productive manufacturing hub and accounts for over half of Tesla cars delivered last year. And so you get this real, you know, it's the Silicon Valley effect. You get all the smart people in one place together. They, rather than discouraging EV manufacturers, producers, companies, they really encourage them to come to China. And now the local scene is benefiting from that.
Yeah, it's worthwhile we're talking about the history of EVs in China as well, calling out a few things. And something I didn't know until now when I was doing the research for this episode was, like, in the 2008 Olympics, the transport used was predominantly EVs. They had 50 EV buses. This is 2008. They had 50 EV buses. That's pretty incredible. I think the second thing that really positioned China well was they invested heavily in lithium. Mm. So China actually control a lot of, like, the lithium supply chain. And CATL, C-A-T-L, is one of the largest producers of EV lithium batteries around the world, about 33% market share. You know, they basically have every car brand who produces EVs as a customer. So not just Chinese companies, but, you know, Tesla, Volkswagen, Polestar, etc. And so China's really positioned itself successfully long-term in two ways. The first is what we were just talking about now, that's the top of the pod, around investing specifically in automobile companies and providing subsidies and tax breaks and investment. The second is it's actually started to corner the market in lithium as they did that. So not just within China, but globally investing in mines, investing in other companies, building out a supply chain, building out a research base, building out the ability to produce batteries at scale, which has enabled them to really push hard in EVs as they've started to, you know, take up adoption.
Yeah, I mean, a really critical part of this when we're talking about the price aspect is being able to develop and manufacture the costs at a cheaper price. So about 40% of the cost of an EV is just in the batteries. It's the most important and expensive part of the car. And so to make it commercially viable, it has to be not only, you know, powerful and reliable, but affordable. And as you said, Albert, the fact that they can build it out at scale means that they can now produce these batteries at a discount. One thing to note, you know, for those that wanted to nerd out and dive in a little bit deeper into the China EV market, there is actually a bit of a technological difference between Chinese batteries and some of the ones more commonly used in Western counterparts. In Chinese companies, they've sort of championed this lithium iron phosphate battery, LFP technology, whereas more Western companies use a lithium nickel manganese cobalt, NMC battery. And the sort of early difference there was that the China-made batteries were lower energy density and they performed worse in lower temperatures, so they weren't adopted as readily. But over time, CATL, who you mentioned, Albert, really managed to refine that technology, close the gap. So now they're almost as good as the NMC batteries, but they're much, much cheaper. So it's this sort of technology difference as well is producing these results.
For sure. And it's even worth calling out that even a company like Tesla, who I think was started in the same year as BYD, one of the Chinese manufacturers, is only just now shifting towards lithium iron phosphate batteries. That shows how kind of advanced China is and how they think and produce lithium batteries. And part of that was just because they just controlled, you know, the market and supply for not just lithium, but kind of the critical materials that goes into lithium batteries as well. Mm.
Albert, what do you want to hit next? Like, what's one of the big items or what's the big topics for EVs in China that people should know more about?
Look, I mean, we just talk about the history. We've kind of touched upon the, kind of the current state. I think it's worth talking about the globalization of Chinese companies. Like, where do we go from here? What does it look like? Is this really just a regional play for China or a domestic play for China? Or is it going to be something that everyone has? And so, Dan, I guess, like, anecdotally, do you know anyone who has a Chinese car? Because I don't.
No, it's a great question. I don't either. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think part of that is because they were just so behind in combustion engine cars yep. that they just didn't have either the manufacturing capability, expertise, or branding to help position them that. And I think because of that, they're really pushing forward. This is actually something that surprised me. Last year, so in 2020, Chinese car sales grew about by 60% year on year in Australia, sold about 122,000 cars, which made it the fourth highest imported country by of cars in the country after, you know, Japan, South Korea, et cetera. Mm. So it's pretty wild that, like, I don't even realize 122,000 Chinese EVs were sold in Australia last year. They're all over Europe. Like, it's starting to become a trend and, like, a ginormous part of their broader revenue strategy or globalization that Chinese EVs are entering Australia, Europe, and not just the region.
So I want to test this one with you, Albert, because I looked at that number as well, and I couldn't believe it. And so when I dug in, I think the reason for the high number is because that would capture your Teslas, which are Chinese-made vehicles, but not necessarily China-branded. And so using that as a reference point, do you think once we start to see Chinese-branded cars, there's going to be a similar amount of adoption? Because I think the knock on them would be, you know, Japan, Germany, those cars have got this associated branding that they're high quality, you know, high tech, all those sorts of things. Are Chinese cars going to have a similar brand, or is it going to feel like, you know, it's the discount Tesla? And is that a good thing? Or, like, how do you think consumers are going to react to Chinese branded vehicles entering the market?
Yeah, it's a really great question. Obviously, they don't have the same halo effect.
Yeah.
That Tesla cars do. But I think there's a really big gap at the moment where people want electric vehicles, people want to drive EVs, but they're just not at the price point where not everyone can afford EVs. And so now if you're starting to flood the market with EVs that you can get for 20,000, 15,000 Australian, 30,000, at every price point where people can afford to buy, like the BYD Plus or the BYD Dolphin or, you know, Li Auto, which is another Chinese EV manufacturer, or XPeng, then I think you'll start to see that huge adoption of Chinese cars. And it's not like these are terrible cars that, like, are chunky or whatever. Like, they still look really good. If you look inside a BYD, it looks very similar to a Tesla. It doesn't perform the same as a Tesla, but, like, not everyone cares about performance.
Yeah, and I think I'm similar. It's not just the price point, though, Albert. I think one thing which people haven't really reckoned with, you know, I was looking at car sales in Australia, they're oversubscribed for EVs, which is to say people want more EVs, but there's just not enough supply for them at the moment. So even if they had them at the higher price point, the Teslas, people would be buying them up. So what happens when you start flooding the market with other EVs? Maybe it's not a Tesla, but does a consumer go, I could wait 1 year for my Tesla to get here, or I can pick up a BYD now and I also get a bit of a discount? I think that's also going to start playing into the calculus of things. And once you start getting into the market, then people will start to see the car, your friends will have them, you'll try it out. All of these other good things will start happening, you get the momentum. So I think it's really, really going to kick off and explode. And I think it goes back to the point we're talking about manufacturing. Who is best placed to fill the demand need for these cars? It's China. Like we mentioned before we start recording, there's four or five different brands: BYD, XPeng, Li Auto, NIO, GM, Wuling. Can you name of another American brand that's not Tesla, which is just all in on EVs?
Oh, that's a good question. No, I don't think I can.
Yeah, so it goes to show you.
Oh, Lucid Motors.
but they're not at scale either. I mean, check out our episode on Lucid Motors. But they're not at scale either. Like, if we're talking about who's going to fulfill that, it's not even a niche. I think it's going to be the dominant part of the market, which is your middle income families who want to buy an EV. Tesla's not going to be able to service them, A, because they don't have enough supply, and B, because of the price point. I think China's going to take it all up.
Yeah, I agree. And this is a competitive advantage for Chinese companies as well, which is, you know, your Japanese car companies are slowly shifting. And obviously you've got like the Prius and other hybrid models from Toyota, but they don't have the same kind of manufacturing capability and expertise that these companies in China have because they've been doing it for so long. Like BYD and Tesla were started in the same year. Like that actually is crazy to me that, well, when you think about that, just because we associate Tesla with EVs, but there was a comparable company in China. And it's also just worth noting why I sing praise about BYD. Like Buffett owns like 13% of a particular class of their shares. So he obviously thinks there's a lot of potential there. I don't know what kind of financial manufacturing that Buffett did to own a Chinese company and how, but you know, it is a good call out. I think the other thing worth noting is that I don't think, especially when it comes to someone's first car, that consumers are generally that sensitive about brand. Like people want a reliable car that'll get them from A to B. I'm talking generally, right? And the branding itself, that's nice to drive, and whatever car brand it is or make and model, is probably more flexible than a lot of people think. And so when they see a car like a BYD or a SAIC or a Leotta or an XPeng or a NIO at the price point they want, and it's an EV, which means the running costs are going to be substantially cheaper, I think a lot of people will take, you know, if there is a stigma around Chinese manufacturing and Chinese products, just forget it because they're going to be driven by price.
I'd add a caveat there. I 90% agree with that. Where I differ is, you know, I think on the luxury end of goods, end of cars, there's definitely the brand effect. And I think that is really, really strong. I think if you're on the market for a Tesla, a Mercedes, an Audi, or, you know, Ferrari, you go even further up the curve, you're not going to buy a Chinese car. But if you're in the market, which the majority of people are, for your Hyundais, your Kias, your Toyotas, your GMs, your Fords, I think you're absolutely right. It will be completely transferable whether people go with the Chinese cars or those other brands. And interesting that the twist on this is I read in the domestic China market, there has been this really big adoption and there hasn't been that sort of pushback where they want a foreign brand because they see it's better quality. Partly because, you know, the younger generation in China, now reaching that sort of middle age, you know, 30s, they've grown up with Alibaba, they've grown up with Tencent. They're comfortable with Chinese brands compared to foreign brands and the quality that they bring. And it'll be really interesting to see how that effect projects into Asia, where there is, you know, Tencent, there is Alibaba really, really ingrained in these Southeast Asia countries and others. And I think exporting their cars there is the first port of call. Whether it makes it all the way across to America, I personally think that's a bridge too far. But definitely there's a lot of runway for China to export their vehicles into the regions.
Yeah, I think if you can afford to buy a Tesla, like you're probably going to get a Tesla. It's a very nice vehicle, high performance. It's effectively a sports car that is also just an EV. But I think if you're someone who's looking to buy their first car and you probably would have bought a Mazda 2, like now that if you've got an affordable EV, you're probably going to do that. And there are more people who are in that situation than people who can afford to buy a Tesla and would buy a Tesla. And so the other thing I would say is, like, I don't think people, and I could be wrong, but I guess my broad hypothesis is that people don't necessarily associate country of origin with a car. Like if you think about, you know, a brand like Kia, it's like, you know, South Korean, or Toyota, which is Japanese, like, you know, people actually think about that as a positive because there is cheaper manufacturing, you know, it is, you know, parts are going to be readily available. Like it's not going to be the same kind of upkeep as say a luxury car. And that's obviously not true because you can get say like a Volkswagen and other European cars for very similar maintenance and things like that. But there is a brand association people have with specific car brands rather than country of origin, that I think that when a BYD push hard into the market in Australia, they can build, you know, a nice halo effect because it is a really nice looking car, or X-Pen or Neo.
All right, Albert, where do you want to finish up with this one?
Look, I think, you know, as we kind of wrap up, I think it's probably just worth having this conversation around, like, what's Tesla's role in China?
Yeah.
And what's Tesla's role kind of in Asia specifically? Because there are not that many American car brands who are producing EVs that have a large brand presence in China. But Tesla's one that is still highly popular. It's like in the top five EVs sold. And so Tesla itself is also battling internally in China. And China is a very hot market. Like, where do you see Tesla and how do you see them playing?
That's such a fascinating question, particularly on the back of, you know, last week's episode on TikTok. So many more American companies seem to be getting out of China. There seems to be this kind of iron curtain falling where you're either on one side, the West, or the other side, the East. And as we mentioned, China with its Gigafactory in Shanghai, like, they're tied to China. And if they have to shut down or they have to get out of China, that's going to cause really, really big problems for them and their future plans. So what I'm interested in seeing happening, Albert, is people talk about Tesla as not just a manufacturing company, but also a software business. And we've seen these tech crackdowns, not just from the West on China, but within China itself, crackdowns on data, the use of it, etc. So I'm really curious to see. I think Tesla plays actually a really important role of linking West with East, but it's going to be the first nail that gets knocked out because it's the prominent one. So I'm really going to be interested to see how they toe the line between both, and because it can play a really, really important role. And as I've said, I think it's already played an outsized important role in bringing up the Chinese EV market to an internationally competitive standard.
Is this the Elon Musk savior of EVs? Is this what this is?
Saves the world, populates the moon. What can't this guy do?
Look, I think I don't know whether we're giving Elon too much praise here, because the Chinese government did have incredible foresight to be investing in this particular space. I think where, you know, Tesla is probably going to continue to be the brand and, you know, the halo effect brand that everyone aspires to own, even in China, even with, you know, BYD and other brands associated there. I think what's really interesting to me is, like, understanding whether Tesla produce a car at a significantly lower price point. Like, I'm talking about, like, the 20K equivalent, you know, electric vehicle, which I know that they long-term are thinking about as part of their, like, master plan. But to truly compete in a country like China, where there's huge disparity in wealth, and there's a lot of people who live outside of urban areas who aren't connected by public transport, like, I wonder if Tesla are going to produce something that not only fits the Chinese market and enables them to compete at a lower price point, but then also enables them to compete at a lower price point globally. Because they obviously can't do that with Chinese vehicles being priced at, you know, less than 10K USD.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Albert, let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to the East Meets West podcast. Really good episode this week, Albert. Definitely a East Meets West feel with the talk about Tesla and the China markets. Tune in next time for more about understanding how Asia tech affects you and the world. We'll catch you next week. See ya.